Inner West Local Country Panel. I'll repeat that. This is a formal meeting of the Inner West Local Planning Panel. Because it is a meeting on behalf of the council, I should firstly, on behalf of the council, acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the lands in which the Inner West Local Government area is situated, their elders past and present. When we commence these meetings, it is for the benefit of members of the public who may be tuned in that the panel members should introduce ourselves. We will do that now. I'm David Lloyd, chairing the panel. I'm a lawyer, a KC, former judge of the Land and Environment Court, former acting judge of the Supreme Court, and after that, I became a visiting fellow at the Australian National University and an adjunct professor of law at Western Sydney University. Mrs. Taylor.
Mary Lynn Taylor, I'm a planning lawyer of many years, and I am on a number of these panels, some of which I chair. Thank you.
Mr. McInerney.
Yes, my name is John McInerney. I'm an architect and town planner and past Deputy Lord Mayor at the City of Sydney.
And Ms. Roach.
Thanks, Chair. Kath Roach, my company, Sync Solutions, a small company. I work across a number of local councils, particularly in the governance conduct space, and sit on various panels. On this particular panel, I'm a community representative for the local government area.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is declarations of interest, and there are none. So we now go on to the two items that we have to consider, two planning proposals. The first one is a draft planning proposal to amend the heritage map of the Inner West Local Environmental Plan to include additional heritage conservation areas to add extensions and reductions to existing heritage and to revise existing heritage items and the delisting of certain existing heritage items. We on the panel have all read the council officers' reports recommending these measures be undertaken. We have noticed that there are a number of people who wish to address the panel on this particular planning proposal, and I'll call each of you in turn. Firstly, do we have Emily Lockwood?
Yes, thank you.
You're on.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. My question to the panel and to council staff is, before you do consultations, do you draw up a plan saying if you get a negative response, you'll withdraw it? That hasn't happened here, even though it has attracted a large number of submissions with 60% against it, so that can't be it. Do you anticipate that if you learn some new information from the general public, such as that large parts of one of your conservation areas were recently flooded by a burst water main and residents are still struggling to perform routine maintenance, that this would cause modifications to the plan? That hasn't happened either. There's been all these negative responses and nothing has been changed. So what was the point of a redundant consultation, which will be repeated almost verbatim after gateway determination in 12 months' time, wasting council's money, which is the community's money, and the time of residents who made submissions? I think what's happened here is that council has a massive sunk cost on this heritage report that they don't want to throw away. Planning resources are constrained, so they don't have the ability to amend it either. So what we've been left with is a dud proposal that's been rejected by the community. Second, I'll speak about housing affordability because the conservation area covers 1,600 homes, which by any reasonable estimate would be over $1 billion worth of land. This is given a scant two-sentence airing in the planning proposal, which I'll read from. The proposed heritage listings will have some impact on redevelopment and refurbishment options for affected owners. However, any impact will be offset by the public benefit associated with the protection of recognised heritage values as identified in the heritage assessment. No attempt has been made to estimate the impact of new heritage conservation areas or the other 30% of the LGA that is covered by them on housing affordability. As far as we can tell, there hasn't been an urban economist engaged, and having no estimate of the impact on this front, there is no possible way to balance it against the public benefit from heritage protection. This heritage protection assessment is produced by heritage experts. It is their job to tell you if the areas tick a box noting significance. If 100% of the homes in that LGA ticked the box, they would recommend to Heritage conserve them all. And that would obviously be ridiculous. So we have to give weight to some of the other factors. And at this point, that should come before we've covered 40% of the LGA in heritage conservation areas. We know that existing HCAs like Haberfield are aging rapidly and have lost their historic position as the first homes of new migrants, the places that made the Inner West the vibrant multicultural place it is and is celebrated as today. They're now a grain monoculture, and the only young people who can afford to move to Haberfield these days have significant inherited wealth or household incomes of over $500,000, and that is no way to run a society. That is feudalism. Please do not let this happen to Marrickville and Dulwich Hill. Thank you.
Now, before we go, I'll ask the panel members if they have any questions.
No thanks, Chair.
No, thank you.
No thanks, Chair. Thanks, Emily.
No, all right. Thanks for your input. And we will now move on to the next speaker, Andrew Thomas, please. Do we have Andrew Thomas online?
Yes, you do.
We hear you but don't see you. Now we see you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. I'm speaking against, or I'm objecting to, the Campbell's Dairy proposed heritage conservation area. I agree with many of the points Emily has said, but I will concentrate on my main concerns. Given the implications of the heritage conservation area, the additional costs, the taking out of the opportunities to do quite minor development and quite sensitive development under complying development and exempt development provisions, the level of analysis presented in the Heritage Specialist Report, I feel, does not stack up, does not demonstrate that the work necessary to place these restrictions, extra costs and extra time and on doing development, it has gone into this report. There are, for the Campbell's Dairy proposal, only I think three of the criteria are met. The Heritage Specialist Study says it's only a desktop analysis. There's no inventory, for example, of the dwellings in the proposed area that demonstrates which areas make a positive contribution to the conservation area and which homes do not. There are no proposals to heritage list any of the buildings. That's either because the work hasn't been done or there are no homes in the proposed Campbell's Dairy conservation area that meet the threshold to become a heritage item. Surely I would suggest that a heritage conservation area needs to be underpinned by a significant number of items, and there are none proposed here. So in summary, I don't feel you as a panel, the panel members, have sufficient information in front of you to consider the proposal properly for the Campbell Dairy area. Now, that's the area that my home is in, and I feel directly affected by this, and I don't support the conservation area. Thank you.
All right, as with the previous speaker, I'll ask the panel members if there are any questions.
No, thank you.
No, thanks.
No, thanks. Thanks, Andrew.
All right, thank you for that. The next speaker is Andrew Murdoch, please.
Hello, and thank you, panel, for having me here today. I'm Andrew Murdoch. I'm going to address specifically the Warren area, the Warren Estate area that is part of the report. I've lived in that area for the past 12 years. I have a young family and renovated my house 3 years ago within that area. I'm making this objection in relation on behalf of my children and my older self and the community. The page 13 of the proposal states that the objective of this proposal is to make evidence-based recommendations regarding residential heritage across the West LGA. The evidence does not support the plan or the report's finding. It's biased, it hunts for heritage where there is none, does not disclose the full picture to the council or the public, and puts objectors at a distinct advantage. It is an impenetrable 950-page document full of abbreviations, acronyms, and references to dozens of other pieces of legislation and guidelines, arguably designed to confuse and create a barrier to objection. If you want an example of the bias, turn to page 35, and there's a table of early engagement. And table 4. And on that table 4, we'll find three lines: very or completely supportive, moderately or slightly supportive, and then total supportive, which adds both the completely or moderately or slightly together to become totally supportive. And then notice there's only one line for totally not supportive. There's simply not enough data in this report to arrive at any decision. The plan fails to mention how many dwellings are in the area at all. No mention of number of dwellings within the Warren HCA. It fails to mention how many people live in that HCA. Are we talking a million, 100, 200? How can any decision be made without understanding the scale or impact of this decision? It also fails to detail how many are Victorian houses, what are the percentage of Victorian, Federation, cultural, overlay, or new build. In fact, in the Warren plan, new builds aren't even mentioned once. There's no mention of new build houses. According, and in the data sheet, if you turn to the data sheet for that same period, it says that the dwellings are built between 1880 and 1920. 1920 is apparently, according to the data sheet, the last time a building was built in the Warren HCA. And that's just not true. I walk past a new build every day. If we go further, it doesn't say how many houses have first or second floor additions, how many houses would be subject to notices to improve their or upkeep their property. There's no mention of extensions or knockdowns. It goes into great detail about a non-existent mansion, yet this was one of six mansions that he built. On page 64, GML's reasoning for historical significance is that it evidences the subdivision of Thomas Holt's extensive landmark property called the Warren. Firstly, this paragraph fails to mention that the landmark no longer exists. And when did it become evidence of heritage? When did evidence of a subdivision become evidence of heritage? The report conveniently omits that there is already the Warren Area Development Control Plan. So there's already a plan in place for the Warren area. It fails to mention this exists at all. It also fails to mention that there's an acoustic and visual privacy control 2.6 development control plan regarding aeroplane noise that advises people to have double insulation and double glazing. The report mentions the notable character and it all hinges on the nexus between this notable character, Thomas Holt, born in the UK, came over, became the Australia's largest pastoral landholder, and then went back to England and died in the UK. Now this is like attaching heritage to Gina Rinehart's mansion that was knocked down 100 years ago, and the housing around that becomes a heritage area. There's perhaps getting the First Nations input on this notable character and his pastoral exploits, being the largest pastoral landholder in the colonial era, might be of interest too. The plan will have a massive negative economic, social impact on the area. It will increase the cost and delay of development and renovation. It will impact on the resale value of the houses. It will increase insurance premiums. And I've just checked that with my insurance provider today. It will increase the cost to council to manage this area, to ratepayers. Yeah, there's a minimum standard. Interestingly, there's a minimum standard maintenance and repair component to this that puts a positive obligation of these people, houses, to maintain a certain standard to their house that they have to bear the costs of. It will be a barrier to cause further extension and housing development right at a time when social housing and costs of living are massive issues. Disabled and elderly, I want to live in this house until I die, right? But I won't be able to put in a wheelchair access in the front. I won't be able to, without going to Heritage Council, I won't be able to redesign the house so that I can continue to live in this house. It has massive environmental impact. Solar panels, water tanks, batteries attached to the front of the house, curbside electric car chargers, designed for solar efficiency, designed for noise, are all going to be impacted by this plan. This plan misleads the council and the public. It should be withdrawn from publication. Incidentally, it's really interesting that there's no author mentioned for the report. There's no one has put their name, their personal name, to this report, and nor does it mention their qualifications. So this whole plan is based on a report who we don't know. We know the company who published it. We don't know the author, and we don't know their qualifications. I'm just wondering how the council can actually put this up online and stand behind this report when it's so deficient. I've actually emailed the legal counsel at the council and asked them to withdraw this publication because I think it's misleading and deceptive. Because I think it doesn't address all these other issues. It doesn't have enough data to come to its conclusions. The council knows this, there are a lot of issues that it omits, and there are also issues that are wrong, quite frankly wrong with this. And I've drawn this to the council's attention, and yet this publication still remains on its website. Thank you.
Any questions, panel?
No, thank you.
No, thanks.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Andrew.
All right. Thank you for that. The final speaker we have for this afternoon is Kerry Lorimer. Do we have Kerry Lorimer online?
Can you see me?
No. We can hear you but can't see you.
Oh, okay. Well, that's probably an advantage, really, because I'm a bit of an old chook. What do I have to press to make it see me? No. Well, is it okay if you can't see me? I can still talk?
Yes, but we would prefer to see you.
Yeah, I know, but I just, you know, I don't know why. I'm pressing on the little image. Yes.
At the bottom of the screen, you'll see two buttons, mute and start video. If the start video's got red line through it.
Oh, yeah, it's up on the top. Yeah, there I am. Yeah. Yeah, hello.
You're on.
Hello. Thank you very much. This is it's very interesting to be so old and listen to all these much younger people give their responses because they're so competent at doing it. I am coming from the other point of view. So I'm talking about the parade in Dulwich Hill, and which was a development that occurred at the time of the first train line coming in. So the first I've heard of anything was a year ago when there was this mention about a heritage precinct, but there wasn't actually any information about what the heritage precinct was. The idea is that there's this one street between, it's just right at the end of Dulwich Hill next to Hurlston Park. And it's near where the light rail joins at Dulwich Hill Station. And so it's kind of commemorating, I gather from the propaganda, it's pointing out the change that happened to the area when the train line first came after this development went ahead. So that was 12 months ago. And up until that time, there's been discussion about all sorts of development happening in the area, but never this street. And and it's not individual houses being given any kind of historic assessment. So in the last year since that information came out, and that was the first time there was any mention of it, two of the houses in the street have been demolished. There's probably a total of 10 that were from the, even less than 10. So I've got to agree with Andrew. There's just no information about, nobody's been looked, from what I gather, really coming here and looking at the houses that are here to work out, well, to stop the demolition of two of them, if this was the plan. So I don't want Dulwich Hill, I don't want the parade or any of it to turn into Zetland or Alexandria or places that have become diminished of the history of the area, not only the architecture, but just the whole, the general lay of the land, the familiarity of it that I have, because I've been connected to this house and my family has for four generations, and my grandchildren want to come and live here one day. And so I've done as much as I can to continue to have the house maintained, but the other people in the street haven't. And I can understand that they would, you know, they want to go ahead and demolish if they can, or do all the things that they won't be allowed to. But we don't have any information about what impact this is going to have. So it's only been announced a year ago, and then the next I hear was about today's meeting. So I just imagine if Paddington had been allowed to be demolished, or King's Cross, or, you know, the places like Zetland that are unimaginable now. I know we have to include putting in this huge population, but when they put in the light rail, they also put in the development along the light rail, and now the light rail's full. They haven't, I mean, the services that are here aren't meeting the needs of the present population, let alone the future population, if they do come in and put, you know, lots of high rise. They did that in Myra Road, in which is a, you know, on the corner of where I live. They did that in the 1960s, and they just put blocks of units all the way up along that street. And I don't really know what the plan is for this precinct. So until I know more, I want to say I want things to remain as they are, and for them to be well presented and doable. I've got one of the original sheds in the street, and I would love to keep it, but it's going to fall down. And when it does, I can't actually put it back in the place where it is. I have to move it away from the fence line, which is not where it's been for the last 110 years. So, you know, we need to really look at what we're doing with the renovation to our lived environment before we get rid of, I mean, my house is 100 and over 100 years old. It's timber, it's level. The last two people who lived here till they were 90, and that was two separate generations. You know, we are building places that are uninhabitable by people, like wheelchair access. That's why I moved here. And I don't need to have, you know, 10 bedrooms or a McDonald's mansion. It's within the relationship of a person to the land. And I think that we need to keep some history. And so in that way, I agree with the notion that we need to maintain something before we have 10 stories everywhere. I won't want to live here in that case. We're just creating places that are unimaginable for the future. Instead of 65,000 years of just a great environment that we knew how to live in, I think we need to address that before we get rid of our history. Does that make sense, everybody?
So I take it from what you've said that you are in support of this planning proposal.
Well, I don't really know what the historic precinct is, but it's a little bit too late for the two houses in the street. And if nothing happens, then there'll be more houses gone. Or, I think we need more information as a community, let alone a street. And I can appreciate the constraints of people having to buy property. But, you know, when it's not like we're building something that's going to be more affordable. To buy a unit around here is going to be 800,000, 900,000. So I, you know, don't know how we're achieving our ends if that's what we're doing as a society.
So is the answer to my question yes or no?
Yes, I agree with the historic, with the precinct being created, but, you know, one street in a whole suburb, is that what it's going to be? And can we have more information about what that is?
All right.
So I think the consultation hasn't been enough, and I think it's tokenism. You know, we'll give you this little tiny street as a bit of history, which is down the end of the Greenway, where the Greenway begins. So we're going to give you this, but in the meantime, we're going to put 10 stories everywhere else.
Any questions, panel?
No.
No, thanks.
No, thanks, Chair. Thanks, Kerry.
No.
Thanks.
All right. So thank you all for that. What will happen is we will consider what's been put to us and come up with an appropriate advice to the council. This is a very early stage of this process. Some of you may not know that we provide advice to the council. The council then decides whether to go ahead with this or not, with or without amendments. It then has to submit the proposal to the Department of Planning, which, if it approves it, grants gateway determination, and then the proposal is put on public exhibition, and that is the time for the public to make comment. So that's the procedure. So as I said, thank you for that, and we will consider what's been said, and we can now move on to the second item on the agenda.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Chair, but we've got Emily Lockwood putting her hand up to ask a question.
Yes.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to clarify. So I know that this is considered the early stages, but we were presented that the community had already been engaged prior to this. And I know that there's a local activist group, Sydney Yimby, who spoke to many residents in these areas, and they were told by the residents, this is the first time we've even heard about this.
Yes.
So are you able to clarify how the council or the planning committee has engaged with residents in those affected areas?
The position is that if the planning proposal proceeds, it has to pass a number of hurdles. We have to give advice to the council. The council has to decide whether to accept it or not. The council has to forward it to the Department of Planning. If the Department of Planning thinks it's appropriate, it refers it back to the council. The council must then publicly notify it. And that is the time when the public are invited to comment. That's the procedure.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good. So having said that, we can now move on to item number two, the second planning proposal that we have before us. This is a planning proposal to list 26 pubs across the Inner West local government area as items of heritage, local heritage significance. And I don't think we have any public speakers on this item. We have had a briefing. We are aware of where all these pubs are and the condition they're in, and we will consider the report and decide whether or not, in our advice to the council, they should be listed as items of local heritage. So I think that's all we can do in this public meeting. We will now adjourn, consider what's been put to us, and decide what our advice to the council will be. Is there anything else we need to do at this public meeting? No. All right. Thank you all for your input.
Thank you.
Good.